As a leader in AI and machine learning education, Milwaukee School of Engineering brings a rich history of a national reputation for cutting-edge degrees. We are proud to be a presenting partner of Tech in MKE, a platform to showcase Milwaukee as a vibrant tech city. Our partnership with Experience Milwaukee to deliver compelling stories from regional leaders is a great example of what's possible when brilliant minds come together. Learn more about us at msoe.edu.
Hey everyone, it's Steve. Welcome to Tech in MKE, conversations with business leaders who have a connection to Milwaukee, where we chat about the state of technology in their organizations, our community, and how both come together to attract talent and make a city more techy. This episode features a panel discussion from the Wisconsin Technology Association Conference, which took place a couple weeks ago. This informative, relatable discussion is focused on robotic process automation, or RPA. It's not a new technology, but the panel gets into new spins and example use cases, especially as RPA bumps up against cybersecurity and ChatGPT. What is RPA and how does it work? How do you even decide what to automate? And how does RPA actually help retain talent? All of this and more is answered in this insightful and fun-flowing episode. Tech in MKE is brought to you by Harley-Davidson, the Milwaukee Tech Hub Coalition, Expedient, the Milwaukee School of Engineering, and BrookSource. And special thanks to the Wisconsin Technology Association for inviting us in and letting us record this episode. And now, on to the show. Thanks for listening.
Okay, the topic of automation has been around for a while. In fact, 30 years ago, when I was in college, process automation was a focus of my industrial engineering degree. It's taken this long for it to come to the forefront. Wisconsin, and in particular, southeastern Wisconsin, northeastern Wisconsin, Fox Valley, you kind of get the drift here. The greater Milwaukee area, they are known for manufacturing. We are known for manufacturing. It is our heritage, and you can just ramble off the list of well-known brand name manufacturers in the state, Generac being one of them, a 63-year-old manufacturing company in southwest Waukesha County. Well, what do older manufacturing companies all have in common due to growth, cost constraints, or the nature of the manufacturing business? Most of these companies have implemented horrible manual processes in some way, shape, or form, right? Somebody was shaking their head. Can you guys attest to that? Yeah, you can. You got it. So over the past 30 or so years, what happens to those manual processes once companies grow? They get even more horrible and more unproductive. So we're going to unpack all those today because, yes, folks, we're in the 21st century now, and those horrible manual processes are really starting to make things complex and slow production down. Robotics, process automation, RPA, and bots to the rescue. You guys ready for bots? You guys ready for some bots? All right. So RPA really came into the fold about 5 years ago when a number of software vendors such as Blue Prism, UiPath, Automation Anywhere, Microsoft, and I'm sure a few more, noticed this huge opportunity and jumped in. I myself and my previous companies kicked off some RPA efforts through various hackathon events, and we began to examine the possibilities of this new technology. What I noticed there and what I noticed here, being back here in Wisconsin, is that it's the business process analysts, it's the BAs, it's those types of folks that brought the possibilities of this new technology into the fold. And what I noticed most about most of those teams and the people I have been involved in this space since I've been back is that most of those people have been women. How awesome is that? Let's hear it for these women up here in Wisconsin. Women here in Wisconsin, particularly these three women up here on stage, have done an awesome job embracing automation technology, evangelizing automation technology, sharing best practices around automation, and in my opinion, have really chartered a new era and brand of women empowering automation in Wisconsin. They have put us on the map, people have taken notice, and we're here today to hear these great stories from these ladies. Hopefully you'll find it interesting, become proud of the movement they've done, and get started, get excited, and hop on the automation bandwagon. So why don't we say we get started here and introduce the panelists. So Andrew, you want to go first?
Sure. My name is Angie Dahl. I am with Plexus Corporation. We're an electronics manufacturer. And I've been working in RPA for about 6 years now, pretty much from when it really started kicking off. And that's all about me.
You're going to hear more from Angie. That's a teaser.
Hi, I'm Missy Yakush, and I am the Associate Director of Infrastructure, Operations, and Security at J.J. Keller and Associates in Neenah, Wisconsin. Been with the company about 4 years, and prior to that was with Kimberly-Clark for 19 in a variety of roles, from an intern to an application developer, and then leading infrastructure delivery for the North America region.
Hi, my name's Luann Hopkins, and I am the RPA lead at Generac.
Woo! Chachi, come on.
And I've been working with RPA for a little over 2 years. Prior to joining Generac, I too worked at Kimberly-Clark Corporation in the IT department in various roles, anywhere from IT training to my last role there was as a senior database administrator. And so I've gotten to work in many different roles, which has really helped to grow my career.
So I should add, since they both said it as well.
Feeling guilty.
Yeah, I feel guilty. So I also worked at Kimberly-Clark. I worked there for about 23 years before joining Plexus 5 years ago. And I did anything from infrastructure through business systems, through lean, and then ended up ultimately in the RPA space before I went to Plexus.
Awesome. All right, let's jump into it, folks, here. So the first question is for Angie, since you're sitting right here to my left. So for the folks who might not know about RPA and bots, can you briefly describe RPA technology, bots, maybe some of the differences of the vendors, and what's being used out there in the state of Wisconsin?
Sure, Tim. So RPA, robotic process automation, I like to describe it like a playerless piano. So you go into a hotel, they have this beautiful piano, nobody's at it, but it's playing this wonderful music that somehow never skips a beat, it never makes a mistake, right? And it plays the same way every single time. That's pretty much what RPA is. Instead of it being programmed into a computer or into a piano, it is a program that we develop. The RPA process will take each of those clicks, mouse clicks, keystrokes, decisions, and we put it together into a process. And then the bots are what run it, whether that is for a unattended bot or something that is scheduled, or whether that is a person running it, something that is unattended. Here in Wisconsin, I would say primarily you're going to find... And I don't think it's just in Wisconsin. I think it's pretty much everywhere that you'll find mostly UiPath and Blue Prism. They are the leading, some of the leading RPA technologies out there. They have things such as OCR. They have testing, automated testing. They have AI, all of that encompassed in with them. Another upcoming one is Microsoft's Power Apps, thank you.
Obviously, and, you don't use that one.
Obviously. But that one, I think, is up and coming. It's not quite as robust and as big of a program out there right now, but it is Microsoft, so you know that they're going to scale up.
Awesome. All right. Missy, I'm going to go to you next. Just coincidence, you're next in line down there. So what is it about RPA and automation technology that drew you to this emerging tech? And what is it about this technology that you're passionate about, specifically the business problems that it solves for your company and what you're championing?
Yeah, so who likes to do the same thing over and over all the time, right? That's super exciting and engaging, right? No, it's not. So that's, you know, everything Angie talked about is what automation is exciting about it, right? It takes those repetitive, you know, boring tasks off your plate so you can upskill. We heard it right in the keynote and do more value add work for your company, and it's engaging, it's exciting, it's motivating, it's helping retain talent. You know, we heard that too. So for me, it's exciting for my teams and getting them that opportunity to do more and kind of imagine, you know, what's possible and getting out of the mundane.
Awesome. You know, I forgot my own model. I forgot to ask a question of the audience after Angie answered the first question. So I'm going to go back. Does anybody have any questions about RPA, bots, the vendors, the software, what people are passionate about? Any questions so far? We're good? You got a question? All right. Steve.
I'm running.
Not too fast, Steve. You don't want to get hurt there.
So this may be a loaded question as a first but it's for the whole panel. So what went into creating your gating process and building a pipeline around what you target for automation? Like, how do you do that in the most efficient way and manner?
Actually, I'm going to go to a question because we have a question on that. Luann, I'm going to pop down to you because you're all about models, frameworks, structures, workshops, kind of bringing the business and IT together, creating ideas, uncovering those whales, prioritizing, figuring out what we're going to build. I think that's a great, is that pretty much where you're going with that one? Perfect. Awesome. Luann, want to give it a shot?
Yeah, so at Generec, what we did is for our very first workshop, we had a workshop with various teams from the business and, of course, from IT. And in that workshop, we talked about what RPA is, and we taught them about RPA. And then we talked about the different ideas that everyone had. We had a mural board set up where everybody could put all their ideas in the mural board, and we could see ideas flying in there left and right, which is really cool to see. And then as part of that, we looked at the ROI, looked at which ones were cross-functional, and then we voted on those heavy hitters, and we called them the big whales. And those are the ones that we focused on first. And then what we did was now we actually do the same thing yearly. We've changed it up a little bit where as part of it we do talk about what RPA is, especially for any of our new people to Generec or people that just weren't able to make any of our other bot workshops. And then we also talk about what automations we currently have, gives people ideas on what we have out there already, allows the people that we've created those bots for to talk about them a little bit and their successes, as well as gives people time to ask questions. And then we also then, as part of that, also have time for us to work together and generate ideas and vote on those ideas, and then we put those in our pipeline, which I will say our pipeline is pretty full right now, and it remains full.
You guys know of anybody who develops bots, by the way. Hint, hint, yeah. Nod, nod. Luann. And Luann, a funny thing happened along the way. You started naming those bots from your RPA development experience. Can you
That's
describe
right.
a couple of names that you've given your bots?
Yes, so one of the fun things that we do is the business enjoys naming the bots, and so we have a Milo bot, and we've recently have one named Sebastian. And then, sometimes people like to name them just fun names like that. Other times, people like to name them based on what the bot is doing. We have one bot that's called Show Me the Money, which is one of our favorite bots names that we've had.
There's a Terminator bot. Teddy bot.
Teddy bot, and we have the Big Red bot coming up.
The Big Red bot's coming, so look forward to that. Does that answer your question? Awesome, appreciate that. Okay. Angie, back to you. You kind of teased this out to the introductions, but talk about this automation movement that began back in Kimberly-Clark back in the day. And when you guys all worked together, what lessons learned, best practices that you took out of that experience at Kimberly-Clark and brought into your own automation movement for your own companies?
Sure. So back at Kimberly-Clark when we were all there,
You got to talk about who did what and how everybody worked together and all that.
Okay. So at that time, Missy was in our infrastructure team. Luann was on our, I don't remember the name of it, but it was like a process mapping
Global Learning Solutions.
Yeah,
IT technical training team.
Thank you. My mouth wasn't working. She did a lot of value stream mapping, process mapping, that type of stuff. I was in the lean organization, part of the organization, and I was going through and mapping out all of our business processes, our back-end business processes, and we were using the lean methodology to go through and make things simpler, easier, better, fix the processes. And then we introduced something called RPA, and the first time I heard it, what does that stand for? Didn't think I'd be sitting up here today talking about that. But so we started thinking about, well, all of our processes are getting better, but how do we go that next step? And how do we take some of these things that we have disparate applications that can't talk to each other, connect to each other, and how do we make that so that we don't have to have people intervening all of the time? And that's where the robotic process automation started at Kimberly-Clark. And then I was there from the very beginning, so I learned a lot about governance and a lot about the right way to do things and the wrong way to do things, like don't go after your biggest, most complex process first, which a lot of people do when they first start up RPA. And then an opportunity came along with Plexus where I could build up the RPA program there, and I brought with me all of the things that we did right, as well as some of those things that we did wrong from Kimberly-Clark. And we started out first governance, because if you don't start with governance, you're going to have to slow down, go fix your governance, and then start going again. So the governance was one of the very first things. And then the other thing is understanding what your pipeline is going to look like and how you're going to manage that.
Any funny stories about Missy and Luann at Kimberly-Clark you want to share?
That'll be in the happy hour.
Any happy hour stories or anything like that?
I'll save those Fox for Valley happy fun? Hour.
Fox Valley fun? All right, cool. Missy, this one is for you. I have noticed an upswing of women in this space as I attend user groups and conferences. What is it about RPA technology and this space that draws women in tech into automation, and is there something you can share with any of the women here in the audience who actually might be interested and curious about RPA and making a career shift?
Yeah, so no offense to the gentlemen in the audience, but I think women tend to be a bit more of natural planners. I mean, look at it professionally, look at it personally. I mean, I can think of all the things I'm doing for my family, planning, coordinating, sports, events, schools, whatnot, and it dovetails very nicely with automation, and it's things that women are doing kind of organically to find white space. Me personally, you know, to try to find time to do the things I want to do, and you know, maybe get a nap in or sleep. And what that's what RPA is doing. And what I've noticed is with my teams is women were already doing this. It just naturally, without even thinking about it, and adding a tool on top like UiPath or Blue Prism and an automation program has just allowed that to scale and really opened up the door to do even more and then expand it across the organization. And it isn't just IT and it isn't just tech, it's for everyone.
Wow, a blend of personal and professional there. Very nice, Missy. Anybody want to add on top of that, Luann or Angie?
So I would just add on to that. I love that we're doing an all-women's panel and all of that, but I would also say it's really the skill set more than it is women versus men. You know, so like Missy was saying.
Made for a great story, though.
It did make for a great story. But, you know, there's a lot of guys in the audience, too, here. I don't want them to feel left out. But honestly, though, we were talking about this, you know, beforehand. And it's really if you have the passion to make things better, if you have the passion to look at processes, if you're a planner, those are the types of skill sets that really draw people in to RPA. And people that are in RPA tend to be just that natural fit. It just seems to be part of their personality and who they are and that they want to better things.
Yeah, awesome. I'd like to add to that as well, is that that's what led me to getting into RPA. As I mentioned earlier, I was a process mapping facilitator before, where I work with a lot of teams to lean out their processes, and also to look at their processes and how they relate to other processes, and to try to, you know, look at when are we touching things more than once that maybe we could change the process a little bit to lean it out. But then also it would show people what their bottlenecks are. And part of what we do for RPA, and my team does, is that we create process definition documents. And as part of, and what that is we do workflows for the process that we're going to automate, and we work with those teams to make sure that workflow is exactly right, because we don't want to automate a bad process. And so this falls right in line with what I like to do, which is, you know, is streamlining processes. And so I think that's a huge part of it. So I agree with you there as well, awesome. Angie.
Process definition documents. Who doesn't get excited about that, huh? Who wants to go do a PDD? Let's go after it.
Right up there with requirements document gathering.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right, so I'm in IT, and we like to, you know, develop and control stuff within the four walls. But RPA actually allows you to employ a little bit of a citizen development model and get the business involved in some of the development activities. So, Angie or Misty, do you want to talk about some of the citizen development approaches that you guys have at your companies and how you've engaged different parts of the business to actually write bots? Holy cow. You're letting the business develop something?
We are. It's kind of scary, but crazy. citizen development isn't new. I mean, look at Excel spreadsheets and macros. The business and non-technical people do crazy things with that I underutilize Excel, I think, based on looking at some of the things they do. But SharePoint workflow has it, InfoPath forms, Access database. I'm probably aging myself there a little bit. But so RPA dovetails nicely into that if you have the governance and the guardrails and the framework that, you know, we've been talking about, that you can really get that pipeline going and off to the races as long as, again, you know, all those things are put in place to protect them and protect the data that we have, right?
Awesome.
And I'll just add on to that. Seriously, the first conversation was business. How can they develop, right? Like, they don't know all of the development skills and all of that. And how are we going to keep things secure? And so that governance, again, goes a long ways of, you know, our first discussions at Plexus were, what kind of environment can we set up so that our business users can play and not hurt anything, so that people can learn, whether they're business or IT, and figure out how to use it without being out on production environments. And so we were able to do that. And I think that Plexus is a little bit unique in the fact that probably 90% of our developers are business developers.
Wow.
The other 10% are IT developers.
Crazy.
Yeah. And those business developers hit that low-hanging fruit, if you will, of their individual tasks that they're doing that are just every day, and it's consuming a lot of time, and they just hate doing them, right, because they're mundane and that. So that's the movement really started in our finance area.
Oh, my God.
And our finance area just took it and ran. And our IT developers, we work on the real complex things. Mm. And so a lot of the things that our citizen developers work on, IT would have never got to because they're small, right? And they don't have as big ROI as some of the bigger projects IT has. So it's a really good combination of IT and the business being able to both contribute to making things more automated, making things work a lot more seamlessly.
Awesome. That's a nice partnership story. Loanne, do you think we'll ever get to citizen development with RPA at Generac?
You know, Tim, I think we will. I just think that our company started a little bit differently, where we started with unattended bots, and we started with the more complex and with IT developing them. But we have one or two that we've had the business develop so far. So we're starting out there. But
watch
I think for our company, I think that the big whales and the more complex ones are our heavy hitters right now.
Awesome. Cool. Any questions from the audience on the women thing in RPA or any of the business relationship stuff here? Come on. Nobody has to challenge. Oh, here we go. Steve?
So some of these bots get to be pretty important to your organization, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Saving a lot of hours. How do you plan for recovery in the event of a disaster or a complete code change of what it's doing?
We don't. No, I'm kidding.
Just like every other IT answer, we don't plan for that.
So we do have our RPA as one of our critical applications. It goes down, especially during month end, and all of a sudden our month end is completely manual again. You know, not completely, but a lot more manual than it was. So it fits right in with our disaster recovery. It fits in with all of the different processes and procedures. I will say our company is still learning. We had an outage on our ERP system the other day, And when that happened, our team found out at the same time as everybody else. And so my team member, Liz, was very quickly going out and stopping all of our unattended bots so that they wouldn't run and hit a system that was down. So there is a lot of coordination and understanding within the organization on how things, how everything is touching, and it really is weaving that web, right? And you have to try and untangle that web sometimes to make sure that you're really really focused on it. And, you know, I guess that's what we do. What about you guys?
Anyone else?
I would just say, just like anything, any other updates that happen or things like that, what we try to do is we make sure that the RPA team is involved. So if they're going to make a change, some kind of change, like an SAP upgrade or something like that, then our team is included in that, and we're right in there in the timeline. So when there's testing that needs to get done, the bot is tested too to make sure that whatever changes they're going to make is not going to break the bot, so that when it does go live, our bot goes live seamlessly as well, and we go from there. And if there is a change we need to make to the bot in QA because we find something, then that's great because we find it ahead of time in QA prior to it going to production.
Answer your question? Awesome, right. Don't tell anybody about her outage there. Especially at the end of the quarter.
Nobody
wants to be in that position. All right. Bots, bots, and more bots. These folks are the queen of bots in Wisconsin. Talk about how many bots you have in your environment, how many you manage, and how many is too many bots. Everyone's going to get a chance to answer this one.
All right, so we have approximately 150 bots in production. Many of them are attended bots that our business has created. A few of them are unattended bots that are created by our IT team. What was the rest of the question?
How many is too many, or is there too many?
How many is too many? So that's a hard one to answer because I don't think there are too many unless they're using RPA for the wrong things. So it's very important to understand what you're doing and what you're automating with your bot. If you're automating a bad process, you're making a bad process run faster. Not really a good idea, right? If you're creating a bot and it took you longer than it takes to just do the process over and over again and you don't get any ROI within a year, probably not a good thing to do. So I think the answer to that is there's really the sky's the limit. There's really no magic number, okay. I guess, if you will. It's just making sure you're doing the right thing.
And can you imagine naming all 150 of those bots?
Absolutely
not. That's a lot of names. Holy cow. All right, Missy, how many is too many?
Well, we have 50 bots.
Okay.
Between attended and unattended. And I want to touch on the infrastructure side of things.
Of course.
That's where I live. So scheduling automation is an important part that, you know, really needs to be nailed down and understood. Because, you know, back to Angie's point of ROI, and what we heard in the keynote, this is a bot, 24/7, 365. It doesn't need time off. It doesn't have doctor's appointments. It doesn't get sick. So use it. Don't schedule it for an hour. Don't schedule it for 8. Use it to its full capacity. And if you can do that, nail that, you know, from a process perspective, the sky's the limit. It really then is up to the business and the processes you have and what is the right thing to automate and doing it correctly. And then, you know, the appetite for the organization. And there's a little bit of a cost, right, because bots aren't free. UiPath has to make a living, so it's figuring out that balance, and that's the easier question, right, to figure out than, again, as long as you're utilizing the full pipeline.
Luann, how many bots is too much? Too much bots.
Well, I would say it all depends on our CIO and how many he thinks is too many.
Bots for everybody. Who wants a bot?
But no, seriously, I think that
that was pretty clever.
I think that I think the sky's the limit as well. As long as you have a good, I think if you have good alerting in place and you have a team that is monitoring the bots, making sure that they're running, we have alerting in place. And with the tool that we're using, we see that tool is updated quite frequently. So we stay in touch with what what kind of alerting and what kind of things they have in place and try to implement those things. But also, I would give a shout out to the business and the various teams, because we do have some in IT as well, for their call out. Basically, what happens is when we create a bot, it sends out a summary report to everybody that they look at to see what was successful and if there was anything that wasn't and has an exception that they need to manually look at. That then, you know, they let us know, like, hey, we haven't seen the report yet. And I'll tell you, a lot of our teams are wonderful at that. And they let us know. And sometimes it's just that, hey, you didn't get the report because it's still running because the volume is way up today. We have that happen sometimes. And then with our bots, we build them for scalability. So mm-hmm. I think that we, as long as we're managing them, we're using the full potential. We have one automation that when we have a promotion or something like that, the volume goes up really high. And so we're able to have 10 bots run that and keep up the pace with everything.
10 bots in one. All right. Anybody in the audience? Anybody else have any bots? Aaron, you got any bots? Aaron has a question.
Because I'm going to tag on to your, is there too many? So if I put on my enterprise architect hat, we're often doing application rationalization and making sure that we've got bots or applications that are useful, fitting, you know, fit for purpose and lining up. Has anybody experienced or thought about how do you make sure that and particularly maybe this is the citizen developer side of things, of how do we make sure that the bots are still doing what they need to do and they're still beneficial to keep around?
All right, so that's a great question. Question we get from our architecture team as well. So I would say we're just looking into looking at metrics to see how many times the bots run, see if they're still in use, determining what to do with those. So I think it's something that we need to monitor as far as usage goes. I also should mention that using a bot, just because somebody thinks a bot is the right tool, it's not always the right tool, right? And I think that might be part of what you're getting at as well. And so we have a process that we go through at the very beginning before we have our bots developed and before we would put them out on the network. We look at the PDD when it gets done, and we look at it from the perspective of, is RPA the right tool? Or is it a BI job that needs to run? Or is there some other tool that we have in-house that already does that and maybe somebody just doesn't know about it, right? So we vet that all out up front. As new technology comes in, if we have a bot running in that space, it's at that time that we would get informed. So we have a project right now where we're moving something from off Internet Explorer, if you can believe that, to Microsoft Chrome. And the default for that application was to use Internet Explorer. Well, as they're doing that migration, the RPA team is put into that process to say, what bots do you have that use Internet Explorer? And let's upgrade those. So it's through our governance that we manage most of that.
Awesome. Great question, Aaron. Thank you. Okay, this is a fun question, guys. So the Wisconsin RPA chapter, something I know you guys are all very proud of. Recently, we held a chapter meeting at Generac headquarters, and we covered a wide range of topics from cybersecurity to ChatGPT. Yes, we're 40 minutes in. I first talked about ChatGPT, guys. You should be proud of me. Tell us about how the chapter came about and what you guys are up to and what people might want to do to get involved.
I feel like I'm talking a lot. So yes, the chapter is really near and dear to my heart, and I'm very proud of it. I have to be honest, I can't lie. The way the whole chapter started, so we have, I got my job at Plexus, and all of a sudden I had this moment of, oh no, I'm leading this, and I have nobody around me to support me that I know. How am I going to get through this? What if I have a question? What if I do things wrong? So I called
ask
up.
Ask for help.
Yep. And I called up some of my old colleagues and I said, hey, you want to start a user group? And we started out with, and of course they were all from Kimberly-Clark because that was my life before Plexus. But what we ended up doing was we formed a user group. We started having conversations. It was really just a general RPA user group.
we started growing, what we found is that everybody was using UiPath at the time, the people that were joining. I'm not saying everybody uses it, but at the time, most of the companies were using UiPath. And it quickly turned into a UiPath user group because those that didn't use UiPath weren't getting as much out of it. Mm-hmm. But what it's done is we've grown from 3 companies to 25 companies.
Wisconsin companies.
All Wisconsin-based
Woo!
Companies.
Woo!
And we go from La Crosse, where we have Quick Trip, down as far south as Generac. And then back up into the valley where we have Oshkosh Truck, or I guess it's Oshkosh Corporation now. Oshkosh Corp, we have Plexus, we have Secure Insurance, some U.S. Venture, mm-hmm. we have some credit unions, all sorts of different companies. And really, we're just there to get to know each other, find out what each other's doing, and learn from each other.
And share and collaborate across the state of Wisconsin. What a novel concept, folks, huh? That is such an awesome concept. Let's give a round of applause for starting the Wisconsin RPA chapter, folks. What a great, great idea. All right, Missy, we're going there. Okay. We're going there. Cybersecurity. Who wants to hear about cybersecurity and bots? There you go. Jeez, that guy's excited about cyber. Okay, cybersecurity is something we all need to be aware of. Thank God William's not here talking about that with us. And building automation programs. Can you talk about cyber concerns? What could go right? Whatever goes wrong in respect to cyber? And specifically talk about ChatGPT and could that help or hurt RPA?
So while it's not a human, it is a user. So you need to follow all the same processes from user provisioning to decommissioning to access reviews. Things can quickly go sideways. And so having that same security mindset that you treat a user for a bot is critical. But then there's the development component, and you need to build security in from the very beginning. Can you bolt it on after? Absolutely. Will it be right? You're probably still going to have gaps. And there's studies that says 2 to 4 to 15 times the amount of resource and time to retrofit security after the fact. And the bad actors have made a business, very lucrative, to find the holes that are left in our corporations and get in ransomware, malware, all that good stuff that, you know, keeps the security people up at night. So it's important. It needs to be part of the governance and baked in. If it's not, you're going to probably have some troubles and some sleepless nights. ChatGPT, everyone's fun topic. It's everywhere. Microsoft has Copilot going as well, and you have to take it with a grain of caution. I mean, we're seeing even the creators of it, you know, going to Congress and saying, maybe we should slow down a little bit.
No,
so you really need to, you know, think about it. You know, what does it mean to your organization? How do you want to use it? How do you want to protect your data, your customers' data, depending on the industry you're in? And and really figure out those guardrails internally before you start, you know, turning it on and plugging it in to your bots or even just attended things, you know, that from humans, and so it's exciting, but it's also a bit scary, and haven't quite figured it out. We're starting to look at Copilot a little bit. Haven't looked at ChatGPT yet, but I do wish I had it when I was in college, because that would have been a lifesaver for some
morning.
Of those classes you had to take, right?
Automate job descriptions. Any cyber folks in the audience want any questions around? Holy cow. Who had? Anyone? I guess I had like 3 hands. Ah, Samantha! Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Stand up, Samantha. Ask your question. Introduce yourself.
Samantha Noble. I'm with Tanium, head up sales in Illinois, a little bit in Wisconsin and Missouri. I'm curious. You were talking a little bit about security, ChatGPT, and you alluded to the fact that attended users going in and interacting however they please. Do you have any policies around that today, or from a governance perspective, like what is that being looked at, like how are you kind of deciding and navigating this new tool?
Yeah, we don't have a policy yet, but we've had conversations between security and our risk and compliance organization to start crafting one and figuring out what does that mean. Do we potentially just start out by blocking it and seeing what the true business appetite is versus the fun and playing around with it. So we're just starting those conversations there, but nothing formalized yet.
And I would say same at Plexus. We have actually blocked it so that people can't use it internally. And it's at a point where we're trying to figure out, is there a need for it? What would that business use case be? But we aren't opening that up yet.
At Generac, we actually issued guidance last week to the whole company that we formed a group that is kind of the central spot to bring all ChatGPT ideas and processes to kind of work on those together in one team. And we sort of advised against, obviously, inputting any company data and using it externally at this time. So internal purposes only for us. Mm-hmm. Great question, though. You get the star, Samantha. Yeah. Thank you. All right, any other cyber questions, folks? Saw a couple of hands. There's a guy in the back there. Stand up. Steve, that's a long run there. Holy cow.
Jared Olson on Tech Systems. Are there any bots who are changing diapers for children? No, on a serious note.
Great question.
And packing lunches. That would be nice, too. But no, seriously, I hear a lot about governance, and it's something in us as a small organization we have obviously a huge need for. Simplify it for us. Like, obviously, with resources of a Generac, resources of a Kimberly-Clark, or whatever you might say, there's more teams, more people, more availability of a tool to or people to put onto that process. What is a small organization going to do to impose some governance into their organization? Like a from an internal perspective, external perspective, 5 words or less.
Just kidding. Why don't you guys answer that one?
I think one of the simpler things that we've done is, you know, created a process that, you know, individuals can submit ideas, right? So don't come with a solution. You know, I want to use this system or I want to automate. Just tell us what you're trying to do, and then the group of individuals can review it and figure out what is the right fit and then have that conversation. Just to build that pipeline and that information has been helpful to control, again, the sprawl and understanding, you know, back to architecture. Is it the right fit, right? You know, instead of, you know, just throwing a bot at it. That's been helpful. The other component is just communication and education. I think one of the things is what is automation and what is it not? Right, and we think at Kimberly-Clark and even at J.J. Keller, you know, people hear automation and bots, and they're like, "What does that mean for my job? What am I going to do? You know, am I not going to have a job?" Absolutely not. It's about upskilling. It's about allowing the human resources to invest in them to do more and better things, and let those things go. So I think those are the two components that really help demystify and then help from that pipeline and getting the right solution and not just making it automation.
I would say a best practice that Luann has done is formed a Center of Excellence, COE, within the company. Everyone in Generac knows if they have a bot idea, they're going to the Queen of Bots, Luann Hopkins, to get that thing vetted through. Answer your question? Awesome. Thank you. And we're working on the diaper thing, right? Is that a whale?
Right.
Is that a whale of an idea?
You got it.
You might need some, like, actual robots for that.
All right. This is a very personal question. I might cry asking this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Luann Hopkins, you have championed the cause for using RPA with community service, as well as taken interest in teaching local high school kids here in the city of Brookfield about RPA. Can you talk about some of these cool things we're doing for the community and our pay it forward efforts with RPA?
So one of the bots that we've created recently was my team and I went to talk to Discovery World here in Milwaukee. They have a lot of exhibits, and they were finding that exhibits were broken, and they weren't aware they were broken sometimes for days. They were trying to figure out how to fix that, and so our team came in, and we worked with them. We talked about the process, and then my team and I, we mapped out the process with them, and we found a way that we could resolve it for them. And so what we did is we our bot for them is based on exhibit numbers. And so what we did was create an Excel spreadsheet with the number of the exhibit, and then that pulls all the information on the exhibit. And so what is happening now is that they have a lot of volunteers that help, and some of them aren't as savvy with email or with putting in tickets. They honestly don't want any part of it. So what they were able to do was to teach them how to send an email to the bot, to the Gizmo bot, and if they only want to just put the name of the exhibit on their email and the subject and nothing else, because that's all they can want to know how to do as far as emailing goes, they can. Or if they want to put more information in, they can. And what happens is it gets emailed out to the bot, and then the bot takes it and it maps it to the Excel spreadsheet, and then it creates tickets for that team. And what that's doing is allowing them to be able to fix these exhibits a lot faster and keep things up and running. And also, they've also shared what they have with some of the larger museums around the country as well. And now some of them are looking at getting into RPA based on what we've showed them. And we were really happy to help them out.
You could be busy, Ryan. How about that? Ryan. Let's hear it for Luann for that one. And how about,
I thought you were going to name that bot Exhibit A.
Gizmo.
Right.
Gizmo. All right, Luann, how about Brookfield?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so we're also working now on a community service effort with Brookfield High School as part of their launch program. And my team and I are working with them. And what this does is it teaches them about RPA, and it teaches them how to code, and it also fulfills the requirements that they have for their class as well. So this launch program, they do other things, like they do coding for SQL and various other things, but we're very happy to be able to work with them and teach them about RPA and be able to let them fulfill their credit for this as well. And they're just finishing up the Teddy Bot, which we're going to be presenting next week. They're able to work on one of a fairly high initiative here at Generac as part of that, which I think is fabulous. And it's definitely paying it forward. They've really enjoyed it, and it's giving them a taste of what RPA is and if that's something they want to do after high school.
Awesome. How about that? Using emerging tech and RPA to give back to the community. What a novel concept, folks, huh? All right. Any questions from the audience before we move into the rapid fire section? You guys ready for rapid fire? All right. In 30 seconds or less, we'll start with Angie first here. So what would you say to anyone, particularly a woman, who might not know about this technology, the opportunities and career advancement that it might bring them, how they can learn about it, and where should they go if they're interested?
All right. So first thing I would say is find someone that already does RPA. Come to a user group meeting. You'll get to learn what it is very quickly. Take some training. There's lots of free online training, as we've heard today already. And really find that peer or mentor that you can work with, because as we were talking, like, the sky's the limit with RPA, and it's a new and exciting technology. AI is right on the heels and part of RPA. So if you want to get into something that's new and something that's exciting, let's talk and get you started.
All right, Missy.
Yeah, I'll just add on. I mean, the resources out there are endless. I mean, the pandemic really helped provide things free, you know, short, concise. So be curious, play Google. There's influencers out there on YouTube for automation, and it's a whole workplace. And so Reddit, you know, all those resources that tech people are used to using, but utilize it for, you know, the non-tech people as well. You know, I wonder, can you do this? And there's probably a video out there. The other thing, it doesn't need to be highly technical either. So kind of back to my original comments of, again, you can utilize and lean things out and make things, automate things pretty naturally in your own life as well as professionally.
You guys stole most of my answers, but the big thing I would have said was to find a mentor. But not only that, I think being part of our chapter group will definitely give you a lot of information that you need. We are willing to talk about any questions you might have. We present on different things. I know I'm going to be presenting on testing automation coming up here pretty soon. And then another thing is that maybe if it's something that you don't currently have at your company, reach out to someone to see if that's something that you could do a POC on. And there's a lot of training out there. And I will tell you, though, it can be a little overwhelming. So what I would do is look out there for somewhere like maybe UiPath or Blue Prism or something like that, and see if they have training that's kind of like an intro training. Great. And just get started that way, because there's really a lot out there.
And I think that you can, it can be a little overwhelming, but it's such an awesome tool and can really make a difference.
Awesome. All right. Any questions from the audience as we wrap up here? On time. How about that? We'll get you guys to happy hour. Any last bot questions from the audience? Oh, we do have a question. Jeez. Rachel. Oh, my gosh. Rachel from Gartner has a question.
I actually have a question for Luann and you, Tim.
Oh.
You mentioned standing up the automation COE. We have clients that are having, or I guess running into some challenges with getting acceptance from the business and getting buy-in from the majority of the group, not just IT. What did you do if you faced any pushback or any sort of obstacles from the business or even within IT itself, and how did you get that done?
I would say just from an IT perspective, we didn't face any pushback at all because it was all under my organization.
Exactly.
So that's an easy one, Rachel. That's a Gartner best practice right there. I'll let Luann answer the business question.
I would say for us, what we did was, as I said earlier, we did a POC, and we reached out to various business groups to see if anyone would want to do one with us. And we had quite a few people who wanted to, so we picked the one that we did was cross-functional, which was, I think, was huge for us.
And I will say this. This actually does come top-down. My boss, the CEO at Generac, is a huge supporter of this because it's showing that we can scale enterprise-wide during this time of growth for us. So he gave the guidance to work on the things that would be the biggest impact cross-functionally to the business. So that executive support and sort of that message was well heard throughout the company and allowed those types of ideas to kind of rise to the top in that regard. So kind of cleared out some of that alignment stuff that you might see that might get in the way any other case.
And I can take it from the opposite side.
Sure.
So ours was heavily influenced by our finance organization, and our IT team was actually pushing back a little bit more than our business side. And so we had them join the COE and help make decisions. So we had a steering committee and we had a center of excellence. The steering committee was more of our top leadership. So that's where, you know, our CEO was, or CIO, I'm sorry, was. That's where our directors were, that made sure anything that they had questions about, we worked with them to figure out how to alleviate the question or the worry that they might have had. And that's how we got buy-in from everybody, is we had them join the ship and help us steer it and help us make the right process that will work for everyone.
Awesome. Hey, before we wrap up here, I want to call out two people in the front. I'm going to embarrass these two folks here a little bit. Ryan and Megan, when you guys stand up. Ryan has built a lot of these bots that we've allowed to talk about today here at Generac. So just an awesome guy, certified in UiPath. He's done a lot of the work. Woo! He works on Luann COE. And if you like this slide, Megan McDonald here built this slide for us. She's our UX UI designer at Generac. What a nice job with the slide, guys, huh?
Nice job.
That's an awesome slide. All right, so as we wrap up, folks, here, just what a wonderful story. I just want to, it's been a pleasure leading this panel here. These are the queen of bots and have started this movement in Wisconsin. Let's keep it going. What do you say, folks, huh? Troy? Sorry.
Harley-Davidson has been a leader in innovation for 120 years in the design, engineering, and manufacturing of the most desirable motorcycles in the world. Their investment in technology such as digital, cloud, machine learning and artificial intelligence, and advanced data analytics, along with hiring great people, will help them continue to define the next generation of products and experiences for their customers. For those reasons, Harley-Davidson is proud to be a presenting partner of Tech and MKE, a platform to showcase Milwaukee as a vibrant, tech-filled city with incredible talent. Their partnership with us, Experience Milwaukee, to deliver compelling behind-the-scenes stories from regional leaders is a great example of what's possible when innovation and imagination come together. Learn more about them at harley-davidson.com.